Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
And I'm Emma. And we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. The worst day of the week for me. Tuesdays. Sorry.
The best day for our listeners. And me.
And me. Yeah, I don't know. Should I tell you why Tuesday is the worst day?
You're going to have to now.
Yeah. So Monday, start of the week, bright and fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, got like 4 more days of the week left. Mm. Wednesday, halfway through the week. Light at the end of the tunnel. Thursday, day before Friday.
See, most people would say Wednesday is the worst, wouldn't they? Because it's the hump day, right?
Yeah, but I think it's light at the end of the tunnel day.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas Tuesday is just like, ooh.
Yeah, Tuesday is pretty shit. Well, that's why we chose to do it on a Tuesday, wasn't it? Because it's like, I know.
Because we knew that we would be bringing joy to people.
Pure, unadulterated joy. Yeah. We don't actually think that, guys.
No.
Yes, I hope you're all well.
I also hope you're all well.
How are you, Emma?
I'm fine, thanks. I have had quite a chilled weekend. Not much to report.
Oh, I've been zipping around, getting around the place. It's been nice. Yeah,
saw some nice photos of you on the Deal Beach.
Oh yeah, we went to Deal this morning.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah,
and we went to just our local. We've got like this local little bay, and we went. There's like a little cafe there that we went to for the first time. That was nice,
lovely.
And I went back to London for a trip. Well, Enfield, almost London.
Enfield.
Yeah.
Why were you at Enfield?
For it was a baby shower.
Yes. Oh yeah, but it was a person. It was a nice person.
Yeah, it was someone who has struggled and has had a hard pregnancy. So that was quite nice to be able to do something nice for her. And it was good to see friends that I haven't seen for a long time.
Great. Yeah. So all in all, quite nice.
All in all, quite nice. Apart from as we were leaving Enfield in my car, there was I presume something, maybe an accident on the M25. So I had to turn around to go back through Enfield and into London to then come out to Kent, which was a significant addition to my journey.
Oh my God. Do you know what my favourite new game is?
Oh, what?
On the motorway, just staring at other people in their cars, because I realise everybody thinks it's a private space.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they're in essentially a glass box.
Yeah.
And the thing
we should
say
that you generally aren't driving when this is happening.
No, I wouldn't do that when I was driving. It's always when I'm in the passenger situation.
Mm.
But I was doing it today. I was just really staring at people. And you just see like some people are just like, I think on the motorway, the majority of people are quite relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, it's just strangers in relaxed situations, just like being happy.
It is quite funny. It's like little snapshots of people's lives.
Yeah, it really is. A lot of nose pickers. Yeah.
Probably fewer smokers.
I don't think I saw a single smoker today.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. But yeah, perhaps that makes me nosy, but it made me feel quite happy just seeing all these people just like at rest. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like quite relaxed. And I know that, like obviously instant, as soon as there's any traffic, that relaxation goes out the window. But yeah, most people just seem quite chilled.
Anyone singing?
I'm often there were a couple of singers. Way. Definitely big singers. And and I'm a big singer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it was largely just people like, there were, it was just quite funny because you could see like those people are sisters because they look identical. Mm. And like those people are probably quite new boyfriend and girlfriend because she is like absolutely laughing her head off at him.
Mm. And she wishes she could get a divorce.
Yeah.
He thinks that the car makes him look like he's got a big knob.
Yeah, absolutely. You see those guys very quickly because they go past.
Well, yeah, they zoom past.
Yeah. This is off topic.
It is. This is our new motorway podcast. Next week we'll be talking about service stations. I could actually talk quite significant amount of time about service stations.
Yeah, my WhatsApp group, like every now and then somebody will text that they're at like a particular services and everyone will be like, oh my god, I'm so jealous.
Yeah, I've been to some good ones. I've also been to some bad ones. Okay, let's park that for now.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I see what you did there. Okay, so should we talk about the show?
We should.
So we've got Sophie this week.
Yeah, Soph's back.
Soph's back. She's talking about coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I felt a bit bad because I literally told her off.
You did a little bit. But I think Sophie needs to hear it sometimes.
She deserved it.
She did deserve it.
She didn't listeners, deserve it.
Emma was like, always like, oh my God.
I was quite stern at her.
No, I think it's always good to make these points.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody can be guilty of minimizing their own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they need to stop. So if I need to go around every single listener and tell them off for minimizing their own feelings, I will do that.
You.
Yeah.
Stop saying that about yourself. It's not true.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that was a fun chat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got Dr. Amina Hersey, who is otherwise known as the PCOS doctor.
Yeah. So anyone who's got
PCS.
So anyone who's got PCOS, this is a good one for you.
Yeah.
She's great.
She's great. Just so much info. The thing that really struck me when I was editing it again was her talking about mental health and PCOS, which is a huge, like, I had not even considered the mental health implications, but obviously if you gain weight quite easily and find it hard to lose it, and you're in a society where small bodies are desirable, of course the chances of you getting an eating disorder are much higher, right? So, and the chances of depression, all that stuff. So that, for me, that was the most interesting part, I think.
Yeah. She talks as well about the difference between kind of different races and how they experience PCOS and how kind of, you know, it can be a bit of a whitewash when it comes to diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Is that the way to say it?
Yeah, I think it is the way to say it. Mm. So yeah, really worth listening to. If you want to for more from Amina, you can find her on Instagram. She is at the PCOS doctor, so that's at the PCOS dur, as in shortened doctor, all one word. And she posts loads of really interesting facts. I've been following her for a while and I find her insightful.
Yes, indeed you do.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Tim also here as usual.
Yeah,
talking and he's
talking about something I'd never heard of before.
Yeah, and Emma thought I would have heard of it.
Yeah.
And I hadn't either.
You're the jizz lady.
I am the jizz lady. Just call me the jizz lady. Apparently not, seems. I've been outsmarted on jizz.
Yeah. So he's talking about retrograde ejaculation. So that's one for all of you to look forward to. And if you don't know what it is,
listen on, folks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We have some housekeeping news.
Yes. We do.
And that is that we won't have a podcast next week.
We won't have a podcast next week, but we will put out a newsletter next week.
Yes, we will.
The reason we won't have a podcast next week is because we've got some cool work shit going on.
Yes. Kind of related to the podcast, kind of not related to the podcast.
Kind of completely unrelated.
Yeah. Should we tell them?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So there is a conference in London called Adweek Europe, which you may have heard of, you may not have heard of it. But it is what it, you know, it's an advertising kind of world conference, but it also has like quite big stars in it. It's always been fun. I used to go to it as a business journalist and cover some of the talks there that were always quite cool. And yeah, so it's all virtual this year, mm-hmm. but they've asked us, the dynamic duo, queens of the advertising world, we're hosting one of the stages for 3 days.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
It did provide a really good reason for me to go and get my hair done.
Yes.
Which I did, which was nice. Mm-hmm.
Congrats. Your hair looks great, actually.
Very happy with it, actually. Mm-hmm. Very happy.
I'll get mine done on Wednesday.
Oh, excited to see that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Watch out for that on the Instas, guys. Yeah. But anyway, I don't know if you can tune into Adweek Europe. I actually think that it's ticket only.
Yeah. But if you happen to be going,
if you're already going in, look out on the studio stage.
Yeah, look out for us on the studio stage.
Yeah. And and if we do hear that you can join for whatever reason, we'll let you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. If you miss us horribly, then please follow us on Facebook,
Big Fat Negative,
Twitter
@ Big Fat Negative,
Instagram
@ Big Fat Negative,
or email us. Just send us an email saying how much you miss us.
Big Fat Negative Podcast @ gmail.com.
And with that,
also buy our book.
Oh yeah, also buy a book. Oh my god, we almost didn't say it. It's okay, we say it in the interview with Sophie.
Oh god, we're so bad.
Okay, see you later. Soph, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of mixed bag. Some good stuff, some bad stuff.
Okay.
Balances out pretty much to be just fine.
Solidly okay. do you want to talk about it? Do you want to share with the listeners?
Nothing really to report on the infertility front. Okay. And that's the end of today. No. Thanks for coming, Soph. See you next time. I mean there's nothing I haven't got a baby. There is no new tests. There's nothing new medically going on.
Okay. Well, I'm delighted that the good and bad stuff has taken you to a solid mediocre ground. Do you have a lesson for us today?
I thought today we might talk about telling people about your infertility. Because I have started doing it more recently. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You've come out.
She's brave.
Yeah, coming out. I don't know if using the phrase coming out is a little bit of cultural appropriation, but I can't think of a better one.
No. Okay. Well, I'm sure our listeners will have a view.
Yes, yeah, they'll let us know.
Yeah, please do. And because obviously I'm now speaking on the podcast, so I couldn't really be literally broadcasting my infertility more if I tried.
It's quite hard to hide. It is difficult. What's been your most awkward moment, Soph?
So I guess there's different levels of it, depending on like different groups of people in my life. I mean, this past, you know, since speaking on the podcast, I have tweeted about it a couple of times, which was a kind of very tentative first foray into broadcasting my infertility, because, you know, who sees a tweet? They come
me.
In,
I see
in
them.
That moment.
I see them because usually you tag me in them.
Yeah, exactly. But it was Infertility Awareness Week very recently. And so I did a LinkedIn post about it and, you know, bigging up the podcast and just giving people a couple of three general tips on how to support people dealing with infertility and kind of trying to give it a workplace slant. So one was around advocate for a fertility treatment policy in your workplace. Obviously, don't say just relax. And then linking out to some resources that people could look at, including, of course, your very own website.
Thank you.
Lovely.
So that was a bit of a...
That's like, to me, that's coming out. Like, rather than, you know, you say, oh, I'm doing the podcast now, so obviously it's out there, but you're coming out on the podcast to a group of people who are in the same position. So you're not really telling people that I find, I don't know, personally anyway, I felt that way, that like it's when you tell people in your life normally who aren't also going through it that you feel strange or uncomfortable or kind of nervous.
Yeah. And obviously people, I mean, I would recommend that everyone listens to the podcast because of its fantastic quality and excellent co-hosts. But let's face it.
What do you want, Soph? You after something?
I want to be on it. Here I am. Obviously, it's not going to have that much of a broad appeal outside people who are dealing with infertility and IVF. So let's face it, like if someone hears me on here and recognises my voice, you know, they're probably in the same boat.
Yeah,
so,
you're on pretty safe ground.
Yeah, so putting it on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is like a really weird smorgasbord of people from my life because it's like people I met once at a conference and former lovers.
My ex-boyfriend's sister found me on LinkedIn. That was weird.
So strange.
It's such a weird cross-section. It's kind of like, you know, obviously we've just talked about our age, you know, like when Facebook first came on the scene, I was like 18 or 19 or something like that. And it was like everyone you ever knew connected.
Yeah.
And LinkedIn now, I've realized in this post is like, oh, I've got people from school, people from my professional, people from all over. So if, and it's been actually really positive because I've had some really nice messages from people that I know quite distantly professionally or that I just haven't talked to in years being really supportive or saying, you know, thanks for putting this out there because I've experienced it as well or am struggling with it at the moment and we do need to talk about it more. And it is difficult to bring it into a group of people when you have no idea whether or not they're going to have had any experience. Firstly, because unless someone has been up close with infertility or, you know, or trying in difficult circumstances, it's really difficult to understand why it's so emotional.
Yeah, and I think you put yourself in quite a vulnerable position when you do kind of, I want to use a different word coming out, but like admit is also not a good word because that implies
when you tell people.
When you tell people, yeah, when you say it.
Yeah. I mean, particularly in a professional context or like with people who are, or even in a family context, you know, it's weird because it so obviously relates to having sex and being a total product of British culture, you know.
Yeah.
That is something you don't normally talk about unless you're talking to your mates.
But also if you're admitting it to people you work with, that's admitting that you're trying to have a baby. And as a woman, like saying that is like, oh shit, are they going to not promote me because of that? Like, no, again, it puts you in a quite vulnerable position.
Yeah.
Or what feels like a vulnerable position.
Yeah, exactly. And also you think, is this... if I randomly bring, you know, because I thought for a while, maybe I should put this on my kind of internal Microsoft Teams chat to be like, hey guys, I'm doing the podcast now. And then I was like, that's a bit fucking weird to just declare to my entire team, hey guys, guess what? I'm infertile. And another thing, here's where you can hear all about it. You know, it's like, people would, I just worry, would they be like, well, what the fuck is the relevance of that? Like, we've all got our shit going on. And I've been trying to think about how it is similar and different to other ways that you tell things to people in a particular professional context, you know, about non-visible disabilities, for example, or mental health issues you might be experiencing, or dealing with difficult personal circumstances or dealing with grief, you know. And I think people tend to maybe tell the people they work with very closely or in their immediate team in those circumstances, but we don't typically broadcast to everyone.
You know, the reasoning is that you know that there's going to be probably someone else that's also going through it. Like that's, you know, we interviewed a woman called Sheila Cameron who works in the city, and her advice to people was that if you're in a workplace and you feel comfortable enough to share that you're going through it, then you absolutely should, because you're guaranteed that someone else is also doing it, and by you quote unquote coming out, you're actually, you know, you're really helping them.
And also, like, I found that when I shared it, especially when I was working in quite a corporate job, I got a lot of people saying, oh yeah, actually I did IVF, or I had real trouble conceiving, it took me a long time, or I had a lot of losses, or you, like, so many people have been through it. It's actually quite staggering sometimes.
Yeah. Well, it's 1 in 7, isn't it? So if you work somewhere that has more than 7 people, then statistically there's probably going to be someone else. But it is weird because also it's not a done deal, you know, it's a kind of ongoing process. So you're making yourself vulnerable, but also flagging the fact that it's going to keep taking you out the loop, and there's not really a deadline on it. And at some point you're just going to go a bit quiet on things and start skipping work drinks. And then everyone's going to be like, oh, maybe, you know, and then you're like, well, no, I just have to stop drinking for a bit. I don't know that. And that leeches into the social space as well. You know, my friends all, you know, on the whole know what I'm going through. And, Sarah Pascoe does a really good set on this in one of her comedy sets. I can't remember which one it is, but she talks about how when you're dealing with infertility, you, as soon as you turn up to a bar with your mates, you feel obliged to like knock back 2 tequila shots immediately just so that you can avoid the questioning.
You just let them know without letting them know. I suppose is that going to carry into the workplace? Do you then feel like you need to update people monthly when you're not pregnant? Like, just so you know, guys, checking in, still not pregnant, just so everyone knows.
I think that's part of it, though, is you have to educate people to not do that. You have to be like, just so you know, well, you don't have to be like, obviously, but it helps to say, like, just so you know, maybe I'm going through this, but I'll share news with you when I'm ready or when there is news. I think that's one thing. I interviewed a woman for the book. We're writing a book.
Have we mentioned it?
Yeah, I don't know if we've mentioned it, but we're writing a book.
Is it possible to pre-order this book?
I think it might be actually Sophie.
But when I'm gonna take it back to serious now. When I interviewed this person, she said, you know, one thing that really helps is literally just like managing expectations. So being like, this is what I'm going through. I will share news when there's news. And then, you know, and you don't have to share news immediately when there's news. You can share news when you're ready to share news.
Yeah. And I guess I tested the water a little bit because there were 2 things that I did in the workplace prior to my LinkedIn declaration. Now I think about it, like a really weird platform. It's taking over my life now. I'm in my mid to late 30s. In one example, like, I have a workmate who I get on really well with who was coming back from maternity leave from her second, and we had a kind of one-to-one meeting, a video call, and I obviously hadn't seen her for pretty much a year. And I was just feeling a bit fragile that day. So I just sent her a text and I was like, just so you know, I do obviously really want to hear about all your life now, but I'm not going to ask about your kids and your new baby because I'm dealing with infertility and I'm just feeling a little bit fragile today. And she was like, thanks so much for letting me know, you know, sending big hugs, but, you know, just really supportive. And then we had, I mean, and she didn't mention it at all. She was fantastic. She just asked, you know, about the dog and how everything was with me, and we managed to not mention it at all.
Mate, that's so brave. I think that's I don't know if I would have done that or thought to do
no,
that.
No, I definitely wouldn't have.
Yeah, well, I kind of felt it was fairer on her, because otherwise you do feel obliged to ask how's
the fucking baby.
Yeah, and then when your face stiffens up, you know, they're saying something really adorable or that they're having a really hard time. You don't want to be like, okay, anyway, so can we talk about the annual report? You know,
oh my God,
because you just need
time.
To move on.
I've done that.
Don't talk to me about your baby. It's not interesting.
I was going to say, the other thing is we came across in my team this really great thing called the user manual for working with me, which is a template that some absolute hero has put together and shared on Medium, which has little headings like how I like to be communicated with, conditions I like to work in. So you can basically let your teammates know, I really get fucked off when people put in meetings at 9 a.m. because I really just want to get on with stuff quietly.
Cool.
It's really good. So yeah, we've used it in like the team that I manage, and it's working really well. And then there's a kind of other things you should know about me. So I just popped in there as a little bullet point, struggle with too much talk about pregnancy, parenting, babies. Obviously there's been masses of it during,
oh my God, it's never ended.
Schooling.
I hate it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then one of my what makes kind of I she was really vulnerable with me about something, and then I was like, she just emailed saying noted on this, which was I think a kind of acknowledgement and a kind of invite to talk if I wanted to. She's a parent herself, and I was like, oh yeah, just so you know, it is because of this, because I'm dealing with infertility. And you know, she has got people in her life dealing with it as well. And then we had a really great chat about it. And
That's cool.
Was, again, you know, the thing is, everyone's basically supportive. You know, you've got to be a pretty massive dick to, when someone tells you something like that, to be like, well, it's probably fine, isn't it? You know, or just
relax.
You know, people do say the wrong things, but I think on the whole, people are supportive and compassionate and sensitive, and often know someone or are going through it themselves.
What's everyone's worst situation where they had to tell someone? Has anyone got one that they remember?
I was going to tell you like how I came out with this. Because obviously, like, all my best friends knew everything that I was going through constantly, because I just, like, splurged it at you. But when I had my first embryo transfer and it didn't work, and I was absolutely just fucking devastated, I went on Instagram and I saw all people's pictures of their lovely little babies, and was like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, and fuck you. Mm. And I was like, right, that's it, I'm sharing my baby. So I put up a picture of like a little cardigan that I'd started knitting when we first started trying for a baby. A, cutest cardigan in the world. B, I now know it doesn't actually fit an actual human child. Might fit a cat. But I just put that up, and it was on a like yellow background, little blue and yellow cardigan on a yellow background. And I put like, basically, it was like a long, rambly post, which I am quite good at, about how I, you know, I thought I was going to be pregnant by now and I wasn't. And I was absolutely fucking staggered by the number of kind messages that I got. And the people sent me chocolates. People sent me, I got about 4 bunches of flowers.
Wow.
Just the number of messages, like somebody that I went to school with who I barely knew at school sent me a message being like, I've got a little girl now, but I had 2 miscarriages before her and it's absolutely awful. And I'm so sorry you're going through this. Like, it's so awful. And it was the first time I'd ever spoken to somebody who could really, I mean, like, I've got a friend and actually an old colleague who'd been through it as well. But like, it was the first time somebody had sent me a message like that. Just out of the blue as well. Like, I'd been speaking to this couple about IVF and been like, you know, what did you do? And kind of comparing notes. But it was like out of the blue. And it was, I was like, oh my God. So if you tell people about this, they largely get it.
Mm. And you get chocolates.
And you get chocolate.
Mm. Crucially.
Yeah. But which when you're coming off those hormones is really helpful. But and then I went into work the next day. And one of my colleagues was like, oh, I saw your post last night. I'm really, really sorry that you're going through that. And then he was like, have you tried acupuncture? Because that worked for us. And I was like, oh, fuck off. like the acupuncture was actually my biggest issue. It wasn't just relax. It was the have you tried acupuncture that people used to say to me.
Yeah.
And I was
yeah.
like, no, I haven't tried fucking acupuncture. Fuck you. Yeah. I did try acupuncture subsequently. It was nice.
But the comments about acupuncture are rather needled.
Oh, nice. there she is.
But yeah, I think that was like laying the groundwork for this podcast for me, because I was like, oh my God, people are so kind if you like bare your soul.
Yeah.
People aren't dicks about it. Yeah. And like, obviously, you know, all my best friends had known. And the reactions have been, and family, and the reactions have been mixed. There had been a lot of just relax. I think as I went towards IVF, people began to realize it was actually quite serious.
Mm.
But I think people on the whole are very nice.
Yeah.
Generally, like humans.
But have you also noticed there's a time, you know, there's the, and again, I've been really lucky to have really lovely supportive people. You know, I've had a couple of mates have sent me books, and you know, one like asked permission before sending me the book, which I thought was seriously thoughtful. She's amazing.
Yeah.
But then there is a kind of period after that where the questions fade away. And I think it's a bit, I mean, you know, infertility is a form of grief, you know, that's not me saying it, like lots of people have written about that. I find it reassuring to read experts saying that the emotional process is very similar.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it makes you feel that you're justified in feeling how you're feeling.
Yeah.
But, you know, when people are grieving, you know, someone who's died, there's always that lots of people rallying around, and then it kind of tails off over time. Mm. And actually, you know, if it's someone very close to you, you're thinking about it every day, you know, you never get over some losses and the losses of people most close to you, but you do stop getting people asking how you're doing on it.
And
you know, on a much more pared down scale, that's my experience a bit with infertility as well, you know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of about 2.25 years in now.
I think you need to stop minimizing your grief like that. You just kind of laughed because, oh, it's so silly of me to be like that when people, like, you know, lose their parents and family and close family. And it's, I think you need to, like, acknowledge the fact that you are grieving every month.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that, because I have a tendency to laugh and make light of the things that are most difficult to me.
Stop doing that.
Thank you.
Sorted.
Well, do it. Do it, but then
who needs therapy?
No, don't stop making gags. We, you know,
no, I mean, but like, make jokes, because that's why we're good at this podcast.
No, but I think don't yourself feel like you aren't grieving, if you know what I mean. If you acknowledge that you're grieving and then make a joke about it, that's cool, but you know, don't feel like you're not allowed to grieve.
It took me some time to be allowed in my own head to think of what I am experiencing as a form of grief. Of hence why I started reading expert psychologists online. Like, I need a qualified professional to tell me that I am allowed to describe what I'm going through as grief. And actually using that word has helped me articulate to people who've got no experience of it what I'm going through.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it's a really fucked up type of grief, because time is not a healer. It compounds with time, because the further along you go in time, the less likely and it feels like things are going to be, you know, the less likely you're going to get the outcome you want. And also, it's weird because you constantly have two parallel future lives in your head. Mm-hmm. You know, one is the one without children that you grieve for, and the other one is one that you still have to hold up a little ray of hope for, that it all might come together perfectly.
Yeah.
There's no closure. It's like, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
It's ongoing and it's relentless.
It is. Yeah. It's like, this is the thing about infertility. This is the worst thing about infertility grief is there's no one event that you can grieve. It's really hard because it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on. And you have tiny little griefs every month and it just goes on and on and on and doesn't stop. And that's what makes it absolutely maddening. Like, it actually can drive you insane. And I do think it does. I mean, insane is not a good word that we use these days, but it does do something to your psychology. It breaks you a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to be something defining about me. That's another weird thing about telling people. And on the one hand, people close to me, I want to talk about it and I want them to check in and ask still.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I don't want it to be something that defines me. And I am struggling to figure out for myself how much a part of my identity it is. You know, now I've experienced it. Whether or not I do have children, it's always going to be something that's with me and part of me.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, because none of us really expect it to happen to us, even though we might have fears that it will, you kind of, you know, that first month of trying, or the first, well, even the second month, third month, you're like, this is it. So you never really factor in how it is going to play a part in how you see yourself and your experience then of the rest of your life. And that's something I'm thinking about at the moment, is, you know, thinking through these dual lives. Obviously it's not going to go exactly to either plan, because that's not how life works, but, you know, one with children, one without, and understanding that whichever outcome there is, this is still going to play into either outcome.
I think it does define me. I see a lot of people posting stuff on Instagram being like, infertility doesn't define me, but I think it does define me. I think it does. I think that experience will continue to define me for the rest of my life.
Well, I think it's very hard. It's hard for me to separate because we do this. So it's very much part of my life every week. And so, you know, I've kind of made it my identity. I don't know if it would have been without this.
Yeah.
But also, you kind of, at your stage, Sophie, I don't know if you're getting this, but I wanted to talk about it with everyone. Yeah. And I did talk about it with everyone, but then I started to get worried that they didn't want me to, and they'd be like, oh, here comes Gabby. Oh, I'm going to talk about infertility again. Let's find out what's going on in her womb. Do you know what I mean? I was kind of like, I was always like, not sure whether I could just let rip, because I wanted to let rip with everyone. It was just, it was on my mind. You know, I almost always had something to say about it. But you start to worry that you're boring. Am I in an infertility bore now?
Yeah, exactly. And it's really frustrating to not come with any good news. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, normally when you're dealing with something really shitty in your life, at some point there is a bit of a turnaround and you can start saying, actually, this week's been a bit better, or actually, this thing has really helped me, or I've done this thing to break myself out of this. And you can't really do that with infertility. There's no news. Do you know what I mean? Like, other than, I had another invasive test. Do you want to hear about my vagina again? There's not really an update. And so, and I also, you know, I find it difficult to be vulnerable. And I really hate complaining. So I actually find it quite difficult to say, oh, I'm having a tough time. And I don't want to keep bringing that, because it's not really a new tough time. It's just like, it's I'm getting, I waver in and out of how much I can deal with the tough time. Do you want an update on, like, I'm at 60% tough time today. Last week I was at 50%.
Let's bounce around, talk about something else. Woo!
I don't think I ever worried about that. I think I just bored the pants off people for a really long time. But I've got to say, parents bore the pants off people about parenting.
This is true.
Honestly, like, I don't think it matters. Like, parents are very boring about their kids.
I don't think I lost any friends.
No, I don't think I lost any friends. I certainly, there were certain friendships that, like,
I don't really know the phrase, but they just like they ebbed rather than flowed for a bit. I was going to say like went on the back burner, but they didn't because I was still in touch with those people, but they just weren't as close as they had been. And now they're close again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've found that as well. You know, one of my best mates, we've known each other since, you know, since school, since we were really young. I told my mates when I was trying.
Yeah, I announced it at brunch. That was bad.
Yeah, me too. brunch is the place to declare your baby making
intention. Fertilized.
Yeah. Opening, fingers crossed.
And she, you know, we'd kind of got married in the same year, and she was like, oh, yeah, I don't know, I'm going to wait a little bit longer because of job stuff. And I was like, oh, wait, but what, we can do it together. You know, like all these twattish things that you say before you realize that it doesn't work like that. Anyway, and then she started trying, I don't know, a few months after me, but then got pregnant basically straight away. And then kind of fully lapped me because she's since had her child. Mm. And that new baby stretch, I know obviously it's seriously intense for people, but I, you know, would check in with her occasionally, but found it really, really difficult to ask in the way that I had done with previous friends before I'd experienced infertility. And I think she got that. And we just had to be a bit more distant for a while. And in the end, you know, she brought it up with me and was like, she was amazing. Was like, I totally get what you're going through. And I've just, I can't remember the word she used, but she basically was like, I know it's awkward because I don't want to go on about the situation I'm in. And I was like, well, you know, thanks so much for bringing it up. And I'm glad that you can see I'm not just. Not just freezing you out and giving you the cold shoulder at probably like one of the most, if not the most challenging time of your life. Mm. But I think, you know, good friends understand. That's the thing.
Yeah. They, and even if they can't empathize, they can sympathize, which is not always what you want, but hopefully they can understand.
Yeah. And even if they can't sympathize, they can send chocolate.
Yeah,
exactly. A reminder to everyone.
Repeat that enough.
Send chocolate.
Sophie.
Yeah.
What is your advice to people on talking about this, on discussing this with people who are close to them and who are not too so close to them? What are your learnings?
I think make sure that you are ready to deal with the fact you're going to get a lot of response. In my experience, it's going to be really positive and supportive, but you obviously are going to have some people who just think they're saying the right thing and say can put their foot in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make sure you're ready to handle that and talk it through. But on the whole, I've found it really positive, and even as someone who really struggles to be vulnerable, you know, it's helped me because there's so many other people out there going through the same thing, and it's nothing shameful, and there's no good logical reason why we don't talk about it more. So if you're feeling ready, go for it. And also maybe tell people when you tell them, like, this is a good thing for you to say, this is a bad thing for you to say. Just listen. I don't need any suggestions, or I don't need to know that you knew someone who just went on holiday and it just happened. Because all the possible ideas I have already had, just please listen.
Cool. All right. Well, brilliant. Thanks, mate. And I'm sorry for telling you off. I feel like I told you off.
No, it's good. And, you know, I think we are really, all really prone to trivializing our own feelings, and actually it's all right to feel them and to be honest that you're feeling them. So I thank you for that reminder.
All right. Well, with that, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Amina, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's very nice to have you.
Indeed. Welcome.
So I kind of want to kick off talking about, you know, your Instagram, really, because in your day job, you're a GP, so you're doing all kinds of things. Why did you decide to focus your Instagram on PCOS?
So I have PCOS. I have polycystic ovarian syndrome. And mm-hmm. I think it was during lockdown at the beginning, I decided to learn more about it. And I wanted to see what was, you know, being shared on social media. I think a lot of us look to social media for information nowadays. And what I saw, on one side, I had lots of very supportive pages, you know, pages that were very sort of, there was a lot of sisterliness going on. And then I saw other pages which were, in my view, misinformed, and were putting out information that I felt was could put blame on us and make us feel like we're not doing enough to manage our condition. So I felt like, okay, I feel like I can say, you know, I can put things out there that I've taken the time to research, and make it easy for people to understand this condition, because it is complex. It is more than what the name suggests. So yeah, that's why I decided to set up my Instagram page.
Okay, well, it's really interesting, and you know, one of the things that you do is you post a lot of like myth busters,
yeah,
which I think are really cool. So we asked our listeners to ask some questions. Because I just think, you know, we get a lot of messages from people who are like, I've got PCOS, what do I do about this? And we're like, we are not doctors, we would like to help, but we can't. But PCOS is something that comes up again and again and again. So we thought it would be really good to get someone on who really knows their stuff about it. I'm just going to dive straight into the questions.
Yeah, sure.
If you're ready. So the first question, and this came up, I would say 4 or 5 times, is about the difference between PCO, so polycystic ovaries, and PCOS, polycystic ovary syndrome. What is the difference? Can you have polycystic ovaries without having the syndrome?
Yes, it's a good question. Definitely, you can have one without, well, you can have what PCO without having PCOS. So let's get into the you know, science part. So polycystic ovarian syndrome is a particular condition, whereas polycystic ovaries is a description of what a person's ovaries look like on an ultrasound. Now, we call them cysts, but they're actually eggs, they're follicles, basically, that haven't ovulated. So if you do have polycystic ovaries on your scan, that's just one
part of the diagnosis for the syndrome. So yes, you can have polycystic ovaries without the syndrome. And in fact, 1 in 5 women will have an ultrasound that shows that, whereas 1 in 10 women have PCOS.
And is it, I mean, is it as bad as, does it affect fertility in the same way?
No, it doesn't, because you don't have the syndrome, you don't have the other aspects of PCOS, which might include hormonal imbalances that lead to the syndrome. So you wouldn't, people with polycystic ovaries shouldn't have problems.
Syndrome, is that where you would have symptoms then?
Exactly. And actually, in terms of how we diagnose people with the syndrome, so you need 2 out of 3 things. So one is irregular periods, or which could mean that you have very long cycles or very short cycles. The other being evidence of increased androgens. These are hormones that lead to things like acne, excess body hair, hair thinning. And then the third is the ultrasound appearance, which I've talked about. So it's actually only 1/3 of the you know, diagnosis.
I feel like we talk about, is it a string of pearls?
Yes, exactly. They call it a string of pearls. That's because there's lots of follicles there that are in a group. And you could, yeah, that's what they describe it as on an ultrasound.
It sounds so delightful.
It's yeah, it sounds delightful, but it isn't.
So elegant.
Oh, yes. So another question that came up a couple of times is about lean PCOS, which is where you have PCOS, but you're also just super skinny, because one of the symptoms is being a bit overweight. So one of our listeners says, I can't really afford to lose weight. I already eat healthily. What can I do to manage my PCOS if I have lean PCOS?
Yes. So lean PCOS is a term that we give to people who aren't overweight when they have PCOS. And in fact, one of the driving forces behind PCOS is insulin resistance. So our body doesn't handle our food the way it should. And so what happens is that we have an increase in the hormone insulin, which is supposed to help us sort of put away sugar or carbohydrates that we eat. But the bad thing about insulin is that it can actually promote you to increase your androgen levels, which will make PCOS worse. And it also encourages our body to lay down fat. And the other thing it does is it stops our body from wanting to get rid of fat that we already have. However, what's interesting is that women who are not overweight but have PCOS can still have insulin resistance. So even though they're not overweight, their body may still not handle certain foods as well as other people. And so in that case, we would still recommend the usual things that we recommend to other people with PCOS is lifestyle changes. I mean, whoever posed the question mentioned that they eat very healthily. On top of that, we just need to get people to look at what's on their plate in terms of how much is complex and simple carbohydrates. So I'm not going to advocate like cutting a whole food group out of your diet, but it's worth just thinking about, have you got things on your plate that your body will take time to break down, or is it something that you will very quickly become glucose or sugar in our bodies? And the other thing is that exercise, especially weight training, can really help reduce our blood sugars and actually help with insulin resistance.
Okay. Mm. So living that healthy diet, even if you are quite slim.
Yes.
It must be so frustrating if you are a bit heavier, that the PCOS makes it harder for you to lose weight, right?
Yeah. And I'm no stranger to that struggle. You know, I've struggled with my weight pretty much my entire adult life, and it's very frustrating when you see other people doing Slimming World and Weight Watchers, and the weight's just coming off them, and it's just not happening for you in the same way. It can be really, really frustrating, and actually, and I think for that reason, I'm not surprised that eating disorders are more common in those with PCOS because,
that's interesting. You know,
it leads us to do drastic things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and that was one of the subjects. So, you know, the reason that you're on is because I saw you on a panel. And one of the subjects that came up a few times on that panel was basically fat phobic doctors, right? Yeah.
So we've heard about a few of those on here.
Yeah. So doctors who were saying, well, you know, we're not going to treat you, or we're not going to even investigate your infertility because you're overweight. But obviously, if you have PCOS, that's often the cause of both the infertility and being overweight, right?
Yes, exactly. And unfortunately, there are still people out there who cannot, you know, who still believe that PCOS is a condition that occurs because you're overweight, rather than the other way around, which is that you are overweight because of your PCOS. So I think we need to shift the blame away from, you know, the patient. It isn't their fault if they're struggling to lose weight.
Yeah. So what can people who are kind of experiencing that kind of, I don't want to say discrimination from their practitioners, from their doctors, what can they do to kind of advocate for themselves?
So I think definitely, if someone is not giving you the care that you feel that you deserve, you should call them out on it. You know, I wouldn't want to go to a doctor and explain my symptoms and they just say, oh, it's because you're overweight. But, you know, and actually, if you actually reword the question and say, okay, so you're not going to investigate me because of my weight. When you put it back to them like that, you know, there's no defense for that kind of behavior. And if, and God forbid, anything were to happen negatively, it would say there in writing, you know, that you said to them, you're refusing me this because I'm overweight. And actually, obesity is a risk factor for lots of conditions, dangerous conditions, including cancer. So using obesity as a rule not to investigate someone, actually, you may be putting them at harm.
Okay, that's a really good tip. I really like that tip.
So another reader, another listener's question. Do you see many women's PCOS changing after pregnancy, as in cycles getting more regular? And does PCOS potentially change over someone's lifespan without any intervention?
Definitely, I do see people's PCOS fluctuate at different times in their life. I have seen some people who have, you know, struggled to fall pregnant or struggled, you know, with their PCOS symptoms, and then they've had a child and it's kind of gotten a bit better afterwards. Who knows? Maybe they've had a reset. But it can fluctuate throughout your lifetime. Even me personally, I have had times in my life where my cycles are very regular. And currently, right now, I'm going through a really crazy, irregular time in my life. And I think things like stress, sleep, all sorts of things can really affect our hormones. So yes, definitely PCOS is not a you'll be like this forever. It may may get better, it might get worse at times.
Just going back to the insulin resistance thing, because I think it's a really interesting point, and I think it's something that a lot of people with PCOS aren't massively aware of. I mean, there are treatments for insulin resistance. One of them is metformin, which is kind of used fairly widely. Another one is something called inositol, which is seen as a kind of natural version of that. What are they like? How useful are they? Do they kind of fix PCOS? What do they do?
So that's a really good question. They don't fix PCOS. Unfortunately, there is no cure. But for example, metformin increases how sensitive our body is to insulin. And so we become better at handling our sugar, at handling our food. And subsequently, as a effect of that, our hormones improve. And that can lead to more regular cycles and can lead to ovulation. However, and inositol is sort of they call it a B vitamin. It's not a vitamin, but it is a substance that our body naturally produces as well. but you take it and it can also increase the sensitivity of our cells to insulin, similar to metformin in some studies, but yeah, without the side effects, without the diarrhea and the nausea and the tummy pain that I've experienced with metformin. Doctors can prescribe metformin.
Yeah.
It's a prescription-only drug and usually needs to be initiated by a specialist for PCOS anyway. However, inositol is easily bought over the counter. You can buy it very cheaply. So a lot of people tend to gear towards that.
I mean, how much evidence is there for it being effective? Because, you know, it's quite a new thing, right?
So the funny thing is, I mean, inositol has been around for a really long time. And what is surprising is that doctors will always say, oh, well, there's not much evidence for it. I can't recommend it to my patients. And for some reason, we're fearful of telling people about it, even though it doesn't have any side effects. It's relatively safe. Unlike metformin, which can affect your B12 vitamin levels, can affect your kidneys, so you need blood tests for it. So I don't really understand why we're so fearful of it, because we recommend other things that are equally not as evidence-based. For example, evening primrose oil for breast pain. We recommend that very easily. And why I think this is the case is that PCOS hasn't been given the attention it deserves in terms of research.
Interesting.
As a condition that's, you know, often said it's for women and it's a reproductive issue. It really isn't just a reproductive issue. It is a whole body issue. So I feel like the research hasn't caught up yet. And you know, I've been working with, I've been doing a leadership course with DAISY PCOS, which is with the University of Birmingham. Okay. And their professors and researchers are actually doing lots of research into things, including inositol. So I suspect we may hear new things in the future about this. Yeah.
Okay. Good. And there's something called inofolic, isn't there, which is like inositol and folate, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So inofolic, for some reason, fertility specialists aren't scared to recommend inositol. No. And actually, you'll get patients saying, oh, my IVF doctor said I should take inofolic. And inofolic, I think the reason why that brand in particular is often recommended is that it's the oldest brand in the UK.
Okay.
And so people are taking it now. Obviously, if you're trying to conceive, yes, folic acid is very useful. But if you're not trying to conceive, taking inositol on its own may be better for you because you can get folic acid from your food very easily. So this is what I've been covering on my supplement series on my page about, you know, what things should you, you know, consider taking, what things maybe aren't right for you at this moment in your life, or you know, those sort of things. And actually, women with PCOS, we often need a higher dose of folic acid than what is in these over-the-counter forms, and actually is a prescription-only dose, which a lot of people don't know about, actually.
The other thing about inositol is that a lot of there's quite a few people out there who kind of suspect they've got PCOS but don't have a diagnosis. I mean, is it okay to take if you're one of those people?
I mean, I think it's fine to take supplements as long as you are talking to your doctor and making them aware of what you're taking. And especially if you're on other medication, it may be worth having a chat with your doctor before you start. But again, the autonomy, you know, the decision is yours always. It's just about making sure it's on file. If anything were to happen, you know, we'd know that you were on a particular drug at that time. So it's about transparency. But I don't, you know, for these sort of things that have hardly any side effects, you might be okay to take it. But I think, yeah, always have a chat with your doctor.
That was quite a self-interested question.
I'm just thinking there's so many different supplements that you come across in the fertility world that could do with this kind of treatment with your insight. Because, you know, just that kind of insight of take this one over this one because X, not Y. You know, I mean, it's just kind of like, it's such a such a helpful thing to have in a world that's really just quite confusing.
Yeah. Okay, the next question is very straightforward. It is, should you limit high intensity exercise if you have PCOS?
There is no evidence that you should do this at all. This is one of the strange myths that has spread like wildfire on Instagram. There is no scientific basis for this at all.
Okay.
And I wonder where it came from.
I think, you know, a lot of these pages, they talk about these four types of PCOS, adrenal type, and they go into more detail and they mention extra hormones that your body makes, like cortisol, which is a stress hormone. Mm-hmm. They say that exercising, high intensity exercise, increases your cortisol levels, which will therefore make you keep weight on, and you need to stop doing it for that reason. However, exercise gets your blood sugar down, which is always a good thing. And our bodies always need a little bit of cortisol anyway. It's what makes us go. So it's not the enemy. It is part of our balance. Every hormone needs to be there in its own amount. And I've actually spoken to Professor Wiebke, who is this amazing professor at Birmingham University, about this. And she has flat out said, no, there is no evidence. And she made that very clear because we brought it up at our special leadership course. And no, there's no evidence for that. And I've tried to find evidence. I have not found it. So if anyone knows anything about evidence for that, I'd love to know. DM me.
Do you know what? I feel like this thing, the like war on stress, has become so deeply ingrained in our society that the idea that cortisol is anything but completely evil is almost quite revolutionary.
Yeah, it isn't evil. It's what gets you waking up in the morning. It's part of our circadian rhythm. It's part of what our sleep-wake cycle. So if you were to take that out of the mix, we wouldn't be functioning as human beings. Mm. You know, even testosterone is not the enemy in the right amounts. It is there to do plenty of things for women, so and anyone. So I don't know why, you know, we shouldn't make a particular hormone the enemy. It's about balance.
Speaking of testosterone, I'm just going to skip to the testosterone question, which is, again, we got a few people saying they were worried about having high testosterone. Can it affect fertility and how can they manage it?
So high testosterone is what also drives PCOS. So I mentioned insulin resistance, but that's actually sort of the step before. So the high insulin causes high testosterone. Now, testosterone is a hormone that's classically said, oh, it's a male hormone. It's not a male hormone, just for men. Everyone has some testosterone. And it is needed in particular amounts in everyone. However, if you do have too much, it can disrupt your cycle, which is why in PCOS, you can sometimes struggle to ovulate because of excess testosterone. So it can affect fertility, but just having high testosterone on its own, you know, don't suddenly think, oh my gosh, I'm not going to ovulate, because some people have high testosterone and they ovulate. So there might be an individual threshold for each person. In terms of what you can do about high testosterone, so again, all of the things I mentioned about insulin resistance will help bring your androgens down, androgens including testosterone. So definitely the healthy eating and the exercise will definitely help with that. There are certain things that people take. Spearmint tea can help bring down androgen levels. However, again, not heavily researched, but still very safe and tasty.
You're going to cause a run on spearmint tea.
Yeah. Okay, here's an interesting one. Does PCOS affect egg quality?
So yes, it can affect your egg quality, and that's because you need certain hormones like follicle stimulating hormone to promote that egg to ripen and get, you know, ready to ovulate. And if your cycles are out of sync and you're not getting that rise of those hormones that you should be getting, then yes. But it, I mean, by egg quality, I mean, you know, how likely are you to ovulate? How good is that egg going to be? But in terms of, you know, the egg, I mean, we're born with the eggs that we have. So in terms of things like, you know, age and general levels of health are probably more greater impact on our egg quality. Things like smoking and alcohol intake can also impact on our on our eggs. So not just PCOS, lots of other things too in play. Yeah.
Fun times.
I remember somebody saying once that if you have PCOS, you might have more eggs than other people because you ovulate less.
I have read that somewhere. I heard about people with PCOS staying fertile for longer and sort of having menopause later on in life. I don't know how much truth there is to that. I'll definitely have to look that up. I did try at one point. I don't think I found anything, but I just don't want to, you know, say anything wrong on air. So I'll look into that.
Yeah, that sounds like one of those things that's maybe too good to be true.
It is too. Yeah, I suspect so. And I think having menopause later doesn't necessarily mean that you are as fertile later.
Yeah.
It just means you're having menopause later.
Yeah. Okay.
Fair enough.
So I want to actually, I might just skip to the last question because I think they're all relevant. I think we've asked about GPs a bit. So one of the questions that you were asked on the panel, and again, I thought it was really interesting. It's not something that I'd really thought about before, is that a lot of the PCOS symptoms that are seen as classic are ones that potentially present a little bit more in white people than they would in non-white women, and I'm thinking about things like hirsutism. And that meant that a lot of people aren't believed when they say, I think I've got PCOS, because the doctor's saying, well, you don't have this this symptom, and it kind of slows down their diagnosis process. How can they advocate for themselves? How can they just say, look, you're wrong?
Yeah, so actually, what's interesting is that PCOS is actually more common in South Asian women. But because research is often using Caucasian participants, I think a lot of the research findings are specific for Caucasian women's symptoms or people with Caucasian symptoms. So that obviously will skew the way that PCOS is viewed, because obviously no single person is the same. My PCOS symptoms are not going to be the same as someone else's. For example, hirsutism. So that's a word we use for excess body hair. I personally,
yeah, my medical language.
Yeah, I personally don't suffer with hirsutism, and I am a black woman, and I think I had this question on the panel, yes, about not being cis and not being Caucasian and having problems getting diagnosed with PCOS. And I think that's a tragedy. It shouldn't definitely not be happening. And I think it's important to get whoever you're speaking to remember that not everyone's PCOS symptoms are the same. And there have been plenty of people who I've diagnosed with PCOS just because they came to see me about their acne. So it needs to play on our mind. Could this be PCOS? So someone might come to me with acne. Someone might come to me with hair thinning. Someone might come to me with excess body hair. Someone might come to me with weight problems. So I always, because I have PCOS, it's always at the back of my mind. And I've had people who've thanked me for making their journey to diagnosis quick, because I had it, you know, I was thinking about it. I was like, maybe this could be PCOS. Let's investigate. So definitely remind them that there's more to PCOS than excess body hair and that you mm-hmm. have other symptoms that suggest that you have PCOS.
Have you already kind of mentioned the symptoms that are less obvious or that are not found in white women? So that, you know, if someone's listening to this and they're like, oh, I hadn't heard that and maybe that is me. What are we looking for?
I mean, I've never read a condition like a study that says, oh, these symptoms are more likely in people who are Caucasian. But there are subtle symptoms that might not be the standard sort of acne, body hair, hair thinning and weight. For example, sleep apnea. You know, if a woman, sleep apnea is more common in men. If you've been diagnosed with sleep apnea and you think, okay, and especially if you're young, you should question, you know, maybe I've got PCOS, because actually it's a lot more prevalent in people with PCOS than the general population.
That's interesting.
Which is very interesting. And the other thing is eating disorders as well. So they're suggesting that we should actually look backwards. Anyone who's got binge eating or you know, other eating disorders, bulimia, anorexia, to look back, could this person have had PCOS? Is what one study suggested, actually retrospectively thinking about PCOS in those people. Even anxiety and depression is a lot more common in PCOS. Brain fog, this feeling that you're just not, you know, your mind's not working as well as it used to.
Is a shitter, isn't it, this PCOS?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, well, Amina, thank you so much for coming on and explaining this stuff. I don't think we understand it very much, do we?
No, I don't think so.
I think even as a medical, you know, doctor, I do feel like this is sort of a condition where we're really at the tip of the iceberg. You know, we haven't even, and for decades and maybe hundreds of years, it's been like this, that, you know, PCOS has been heard about, but not much research has been done into it, unfortunately.
It's one of these quote unquote women's problems, isn't it? That just doesn't deserve any attention.
Exactly. I was looking at how much research goes into erectile dysfunction, which is a male, you know, quote, male problem. That is as prevalent as PCOS, but it gets thousands of more papers, more research. Yeah, thousands more.
So much less interesting.
Yeah. I mean, big pharma's view, sex is very important and it definitely needs to be, you know, helped out. But for some reason, this condition that affects people's entire lives doesn't deserve as much attention.
It's so frustrating. The amount of people we've heard who've just not been diagnosed for years. It's maddening. Now it's time for
IVF.
What the F? Less good on the harmony.
Yeah, that's good.
Bit flat today, guys. Retrograde ejaculation. Let's get it back up again and talk about this.
According to the Google, the first result on Google, retrograde ejaculation occurs when semen enters the bladder instead of emerging through the penis during orgasm. Now that sounds uncomfortable to me.
It does sound a bit uncomfortable, doesn't it?
The thing that emerges from this that I find absolutely fascinating is that you can get sperm. So if somebody has retrograde ejaculation, they don't need to, the doctors can get sperm out.
Of the bladder?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. It's like, science is amazing.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well, I suppose they're in there.
Yeah, I mean, they're in there, so they just get them out.
Wow. Well, I don't think we should marvel at the wonders of retrograde ejaculation without actually putting it to Tim, because I think neither of us really know what we're talking about here.
Well, here's what he has to say.
Thank God.
So retrograde ejaculation, as it says, is when during intercourse the sperm actually goes into the bladder rather than be deposited. at the end of the urethra. And the reason for this is that during ejaculation, there's actually quite a complex set of constricting muscles that have to work in the correct order to allow sperm to exit the vas deferens into the urethra. And if it goes wrong, it actually then goes into the bladder. And there are a number of different causes for it's actually relatively uncommon, but there are a number of different causes, and they tend to be three main groups. One would be that a man has had surgery beforehand. The classic sort of surgery would be prostate type surgery, but if he's also had surgery for pelvic cancer, that can cause retrograde ejaculation. The second group of causes would be underlying neurological disease, so perhaps diabetes that's affected nerves, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, there are a few different neurological diseases. And the third broad group of causes would be certain types of drugs, and particularly some drugs that are used for high blood pressure. The man may notice that he has retrograde ejaculation because perhaps he has what's sometimes called a dry ejaculation with no or very, very little fluid being emitted in the ejaculation. And also, obviously, it may go along with a problem with his partner not getting pregnant. In terms of treatments, well, if it's happening because the man is taking some high blood pressure or other types of drugs, then that would need to be looked at. If it's happening because of neurological disease, or diabetes, multiple sclerosis, etc., then sometimes there are some drugs that can be used to help improve the coordination of the muscles along the reproductive tract that may help reduce the chance of retrograde ejaculation. If the cause is surgical, so previous surgery, then there may not be a lot that can be done to alter that outcome. Having said that, in terms of what we can do within an IVF clinic, then for men with retrograde ejaculation, what we can do is we can get him to ejaculate, then to pass urine. The urine is collected, and then very often the man would be given some tablets beforehand to help change the pH of the urine. So the urine is then, he just passes urine, it's collected, and then the scientists then centrifuge the urine and get the sperm out of the urine, which can then be used as part of treatments such as insemination treatment or IVF. And the stage beyond that sometimes would be a surgical sperm retrieval, so a biopsy to get sperm, which is then used as part of an IVF cycle and is injected into the woman's eggs using a procedure called ICSI after she's had her egg collection following IVF. So I think the bottom line, retrograde ejaculation is relatively uncommon. It may be possible to treat it to stop the man having retrograde ejaculation, dependent on the underlying cause. But even if that's not possible, then sperm can be collected from urine or from a surgical sperm retrieval. So I think the chance of actually the female partner getting pregnant is still pretty good.
C'est fin.
C'est fin. Oh, you're so cultured.
Aren't I? I surprise myself sometimes. Sorry. Yeah, guys, we hope you enjoyed the episode. I think it was a banger.
Yeah.
As usual.
I think another classic, actually. Another solid classic BFN episode.
Mm-hmm.
So next week, no episode, but if you want to sign up for the newsletter, it's on our website. So just go to bigfatnegative.com and click on newsletter and put your email address in there.
Yeah, or you can go through our Instagram. It's in our link tree.
It is in our link tree. And then who are we speaking to the week after, Gabs?
Not a fictional mum.
Not a fictional mum. And she is talking about...
adoption.
Yeah, she is. You had a little cry there, didn't you?
Yeah, I had to cry twice because I also interviewed her for the book. Don't know if we mentioned the book before. Get that in there.
Yeah, I forgot that we'd written the book.
Pre-order the book. So yeah, I've interviewed her twice now and both times cried.
I didn't cry and then felt like a heartless, evil bastard.
Well, someone had to maintain the professionalism. Glad you did. I was just weeping.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a nice interview. And when I say nice, I mean, it might make you cry too, but it's a really, I think personally, quite a good one for anyone who's thinking about adoption, because yeah. I don't think she puts you off it at all. I think, no. I think she's very honest.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I came away from it thinking, yeah, I could, yeah, she's right, I could do that. And yeah, I think it's a good one, basically, yeah. For that very reason. She's also great. She's quite funny.
She's very funny. And
she's lols on Insta.
Yeah, she is lols on Insta, and she's also from my neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah, she's a West Country girl.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see you the week after next.
Indeed. We love you very much.
We love you. Bye. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.